Hello, and welcome to the Missionary Disciple Podcast by Catholic Christian Outreach. The aim of this podcast is to inspire, equip, and challenge you, our listener, to be an active and effective evangelist. I'm your host, Gerhard, a missionary here at CCO, and today I sit down with Mylène, Joel, and Caleb Renier. Mylène is the narrator and primary writer on Brick by Brick, How to Raise a Missionary Disciple Family, and Joe and Caleb Renier are both CCO missionaries as well as co-authors on this book. Before we get started, if you have any questions about evangelization, please email us at podcast@cco.ca and we'll answer them in a future episode. All right, let's dive in. Welcome to the podcast. This week, we're doing something a little different. We are actually going to be previewing the book Brick by Brick by the Renier family. And this book talks about how to raise a missionary disciple family. And with me here today, we have André Renier, the grandfather, head of the family. We have as well the three oldest children, Mylène, Joe, and Caleb. And we're going to be going through the book in brief, but also just trying to pull out some stories and have some fun here on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is. I'm really excited about today because it is the Renier family presenting and talking about the book that we wrote together. But I want everyone to know that we're also a musical family. And at the end of this podcast, we're going to be, we have a few songs we've written and we're going to be singing. And I'll be led by my daughter, Mylène. She's got a wonderful voice. Caleb, he plays a violin. And Joe plays the spoons. Yeah. He's gifted.
Mm-hmm. Lots of practice.
Lots of practice. So, but to start off today, we just want to talk a little bit about the book. But I thought we would spend time talking about the process of writing the book and kind of the challenges. And for those that will be picking up the book, you'll see what is unique about the book is that the primary author is my oldest daughter, and she will be the voice that you'll hear throughout the book. And so the fact that she's a primary author means she put a lot more work in than Joe and Caleb did, and myself, by the way. So anyway, Mylène, talk to us a little bit about how difficult you found, or what were the challenges of writing the book? Because you had two children.
You had to keep these guys in line.
Yeah.
How difficult was it?
She also had to learn how to read, so.
Yeah, that was, I think, the biggest challenge. And also, removing a lot of heresy. There was a lot of heresy.
Yeah.
But especially from Joe. But yeah, it was interesting because it was basically the book comes out of conversations. So we had conversations as a family, and then everyone gets assigned different stories or topics that they would be able to talk about. And so I was receiving all this and everything that people were writing, it wasn't meant to come together yet, so I had to take it all and do a flow and have it come together. So that was probably the biggest challenge, was taking everybody's portions and making them flow together and work into each other. Yeah. And also removing repetitive stories.
What do you mean by repetitive stories?
Well, sometimes someone misunderstood what they were assigned and they would write what another person was assigned. So there's some deleting.
When you say somebody, who are you really talking about?
May have been, I think, you and Joe and Caleb, but all of you, you were all the biggest culprits.
We have the guilty party on the podcast.
an intervention.
So share with us a bit about the experience of having these conversations, because the idea of writing a book is one thing. The idea of writing a book as an entire family is a totally different monster altogether. How are those conversations for you guys leading into, like, hey, maybe we could write a book, to, wow, we're actually writing a book?
I think it was kind of fun because it was an opportunity to kind of be self-aware and, like, what makes us us. So they'd take a long time. It was enjoyable. It wasn't difficult. And we just sit there for a couple hours and just talk about, yeah, what are the unique things that that helped us or that were difficult. And, those were probably the most enjoyable parts for me of writing the book.
Yeah, I think one thing that was cool was, because we talk about things, you know, what made our family work, and we didn't know it. I know for me, when we were having the conversations, like, I didn't always know actually what it was. We kind of had to boil it down to, like, what were the things. But then it was also cool seeing that a lot of the things I'm like, oh yeah, this was a significant thing, that it was actually something mom and dad had done intentionally. But I didn't realize. I just thought it was like the way the family went. But they had made decisions and put things into place and brought people into our lives in order to bring about the fruit that we see now. So that was really cool.
So there was a reason that we sent you to your room.
Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't just random outbursts. It was very intentional.
Yeah. I spent most of my childhood in my room.
So. Milene, you know, they're talking about, you know, the experience, the Sunday afternoon, sitting around, drinking coffee, having these conversations. Who would you say spent most of their time while we're in conversation on Facebook? While we're these discussions? Because I remember always having to say, put that phone down.
Who was it? I don't know.
Joe? I was keeping up on scores, but
I think everyone had their own little thing that they were.
We had to deal with addictions on those afternoons.
A lot of addictions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for killing the conversation.
So we've got the three oldest here, and there's a bit of a gap between you three and then the youngest two. Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up in a family whose parents are missionaries? You all went to public school, so your experience of family and your experience of how your family is being perceived in the outside world in terms of what your mom and dad are doing would be different from your other classmates whose parents hold down regular jobs. So what was it like growing up in a missionary family?
I think the key was we were surrounded by exceptional people because my parents work with exceptional people. So we were constantly seeing these people, seeing how they lived, hearing their having conversations with them and hearing those conversations. And then with that, we would, as we're playing or doing different things, we were actually hearing high level conversations about evangelization, the faith, holiness, all those things at our dining room table or our living room. So like, even though sometimes we weren't actually engaged in the conversations, we were hearing them and we would get these little tidbits of, yeah. So that's like something special that we had in having our parents working with these people.
But it's interesting too, because I think that's one of the questions I would get probably most often about being a Renier. And one thing I find interesting is that I feel like the way I was raised was very similar to everyone else. Like, I didn't feel like I was odd or like my life was totally weird. Like, I felt that it was very normal the way we were raised. But like Milan was saying, it was that we saw something greater through our family, through the students that would be around the house, through the missionaries that we would see. And for me, it was that I saw that a relationship with God could be something exciting, adventurous, that I saw that my faith wasn't just a Sunday thing. I saw young people who were on fire. And so my role models, people I wanted to be like, were university students, you know, who didn't swear, who were, had virtue and really ultimately a relationship with Jesus. And that's what I wanted one day, even as a teenager and as a kid. And I think that is probably the biggest, what was it like? It was normal. It wasn't weird, but it was exposing me to something, a greater reality of God. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about you, for you, Joe? What was it like?
It was good.
That's good.
Mom was a really good cook.
Yeah. Very much what Cale was saying is that it did feel normal. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, with that adventure thing is that we got these really cool experiences that none of our peers had. And I know for me, I was like very proud of that, like talking about like mission trips. Like in the book, I talk about how in grade six, I actually did like my entire speech for the like kind of public speaking competition on Dad. And it was like Dad, founder of CCO.
He just didn't want to do any research is all.
That's also
he also
true.
Didn't know that mom was also founder of CCO at the time.
I remember sitting on the stairs.
Very selective research.
Just talk to Dad. But I was like sitting on the stairs and I was telling Milan the opening. And I'm like, my dad founded Catholic Christian Outreach. And he goes, mom also founded CCO. And I go, no, it's Dad. She says, no, they're co-founders. Like, no. So I go downstairs to mom. I'm like, mom, Milan's saying that you founded CCO too. She's like, yeah. So it took me until I was like, 12 years old to find out that they were co-founders. It wasn't just Dad.
That mom didn't just bake cookies all day.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'd often, I remember being in, like playing on the street and talking with some of the kids down the road, playing road hockey or something. And I went up to one of the kids and I'm like, have you ever been on a mission trip? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, no, you haven't. Like, I've been on a mission trip. Like, I've gone on 2 mission trips. And he goes, no, like my family's here on a mission. And I still don't know what he meant by that. But I was like not buying it because I'm like, I'm the only kid on the block. I'm the only kid in the school who gets to go on mission. And so that was something that I was like very proud of. Was faith wasn't like embarrassing or weird. It was like something I'd show off about on the playground.
And what was your experience of the other kids in your class sharing your faith, for you to sharing your faith so actively? How were the other kids taking it?
Like not in a bad way, but I was like the Catholic kid. Like they all knew that Joe was like super into faith and talking in religion class. I know Caleb, you had like people didn't understand though what mom and dad did. Mm. Right? You had that one guy that was asking about like dad being in Rome.
Oh yeah. I think he thought dad was a bishop or something. He definitely didn't understand. But one of the top, we talk about that in the book, and one of the things that we spoke about is that for us in elementary school and high school, one of the big things we tried to do was, really witnessing, being ambassadors of Christ. And that was kind of one of the big ways that we did that. And there's a chapter really devoted to this, but is being like in the world, but not of the world. And that's a witness to the people around. Yeah, so that was a big tool we'd use, is really witness things through our lives and the way we live.
And can you give an example of how you do that practically, like particularly in a high school situation, mm-hmm. or even in university?
Maybe Caleb, weren't you the class president? And tell us a little bit of how you're actively involved in your school.
The kindergarten class president.
Yeah, I got voted in. It was a big deal for me. I think for me, one of the things was that I wanted my life to be a witness, and I wanted who I was to be attractive to other people, meaning my virtues, the way I treated others, that would be attractive, and that people would know that it wasn't just because I was a really stand-up guy, but that it was because of my faith, it was because of my relationship with Jesus that I am the way I am. And so, yeah, whether it be like, being a student athlete, that would match me to like be a leader on the field or whatever, to be a good friend, you know, all those kind of things, you know, it's very cliche, you know, like being a good person, but that it didn't end there for me, that it was also that it was my faith that made that. And that would be, yeah, speaking openly about God. And, but one of probably the biggest things would be like something like inviting a friend to youth group was one of the more explicit ways that I could witness and evangelize as a high school student.
Cool. Now, I think one thing most listeners may be thinking right now is like, okay, great. You guys grew up with, you know, your parents founded a missionary movement. Like, you're just gonna get all of this by osmosis. And yeah, like what Andre and Angel did was very intentionally build this culture within the family of being missionary, of living the faith. However, as you've talked about on this podcast numerous times, your conversion is not just something that it happens by osmosis, but it's an actual choice that you make. So share with us your own testimony, your own conversion story of times where, like, you know, even within this family that you still had to make that choice. Like what led you to that point? How involved were your parents in it? How not involved were your parents in that choice?
For me, I think I, like looking back, can say that I absorbed a relationship with Jesus from a young age. And I think, that was through the different experiences that I had. But I did have a time of falling away when I was in my older years of high school. And then that was a time where I had to come back. But it was easy for me to do so because I had that basis. So it was just, it felt like the natural thing to come back to was to Jesus. And it wasn't like I didn't feel like it was, oh, my parents are the ones teaching me all these things. Like, it felt like it was an encounter I was having with God throughout my whole life. And it was actually just between me and God. And my family was just a side thing that would have helped inspire me in different ways. But I really felt like it was just between me and God. So
was there anything your parents did that helped encourage that encounter and that relationship with God? Or was that something like you just happened to have this relationship out of nowhere?
in the book we'll be describing, there's a lot of different things. So for me, I can't think of like, oh, there was one thing that they did, because it honestly is the sum of everything, like from the people we had in our lives to discussions we had as a family, like little kids clubs, Catholic kids clubs that we were in, friends, like there was a culmination of all these things, like going to even fall retreats and praying during that time. I had like an experience of God when I was 8. Like, so, you know, it's just a culmination of all these things together. So, and it wasn't just because my parents are missionaries. It was experiencing the faith in many different forms.
One thing I think that's really fascinating is that you said like you walked away from the faith a little bit during high school and then came back in. Mm-hmm. When you came back in, is that something you intentionally did, or do you feel like, oh, I have to do this to make mom and dad happy?
No, it was something that like I just felt empty, and I knew that the only thing that would fulfill me was Jesus because I had experienced him in the past. And so like I would have like known through the encouragement of my parents, but I didn't feel like they were forcing us at all. There was never, so that's why I have a hard time saying they, you know, but because it wasn't a forcing thing. Mm-hmm. It was just a encouragement, and just like they like displayed to us the option, like this is the ultimate option, is having a relationship with Jesus. So I clearly understood it because of the way they presented it to me.
Okay.
I totally agree with what Milan's saying, because I think, yeah, what mom and dad did is that faith was always explained in the context of relationships. So even like before I'd made that decision, I knew that's what it was about. Like I knew that encountering Jesus like was a possibility. I knew that Jesus is someone that when you've encountered him, you talk about in a personal way, someone that you know. So I know for me, like my story is that I always grew up knowing a lot about my faith, but there's a big difference between knowing about someone and actually knowing them personally. So I knew about God, like I knew it all as a kid, like as much as a kid can know. But for me, God was still like just distant. He was like big guy in the clouds. I knew he loved me, but it wasn't something I knew or experienced in my life. But it was what mom and dad did. It's not like, you know, they sat me down, brought me to an adoration chapel and said like, do this, do that, do this. They made sure that I got plugged into the youth group. And so when I was in grade 7, I went away for a weekend retreat. It was like my first weekend away. And I remember going into adoration. Obviously, I'd been to adoration before. I'd been to fall retreats through CCO and stuff like that as a kid. But I don't have any like explicit memory of it, of going to adoration. But I remember going in, my friend turns to me. He's like, Joe, this is going to be like 2 hours of prayer. Like, that's brutal. But I knew deep down, I turned to him and I went like, no, like something big is about to happen tonight. Like I just had this sense that big stuff was going to happen. And so we like started adoration. But before that, they showed this video with like scenes from the Passion of the Christ. And I remember watching that and just being like cut to the heart, because I realized Jesus died for me. And like it went from like kind of a mind thing to like it went to my heart. I realized he died to save me from my sins, which had separated me from him. Then adoration started, and immediately I just started bawling my eyes out because I like encountered Jesus, that God I knew about, I now knew personally. And then actually like after that, there was some silence and I actually heard my name called out 3 times. And so I knew then that like Jesus was calling me to follow him with my whole life. And not using a UR, like, and not like, I don't even remember like an explicit like prayer that I would have prayed, but I know that on that weekend, I made the decision that I'm going to start living my life for Jesus. And that encounter actually changed everything. Like I remember going to Mass and the next Sunday, and it was totally different. Yeah, so that was kind of for me the turning point. In high school, I wasn't like the best example of the faith, but it was actually like at a different retreat, Dad gave a talk on evangelization where for the first time, my heart was set on fire for mission. I realized like, this isn't just a me and Jesus thing. Like, I need to share this with my friends. But then it wasn't until I got to university, got involved with CCO, that I actually learned the how to effectively evangelize, like through discovery, through the UR.
Yeah, so it sounds like for you, in many ways for you as well, Milan, that your experiences and your encounters with Christ happened in some ways outside the family. Mm-hmm. The family just provided the environment to enable further growth and enable the relationship, but your conversion happened at a retreat. Your, let's say the missionary conversion happened, you know, at, somewhere else outside the family.
Yeah.
But the family really provided that environment that enabled it so that, you know, once you had your conversion, it's not like, okay, great, you had this experience. And then, you know, a week later, it's like, oh, I don't know how to do, like, I have no support.
Yeah, I think that's like an important thing, is because easily people could look and, well, like, well, your parents are full-time missionaries, founders of a movement, and it's not relatable. But I'm like, all of us actually encountered Jesus, like us three older ones, like actually like outside of the family. So it's not something that's impossible for any like normal family to experience. But what made us open to it is actually like the hard work mom and dad did at the home, kind of creating an environment and atmosphere where like our hearts were open to that, and then sending us to places to encounter him and do it on our own, not because they told us.
Mm-hmm. And how about yourself, Caleb?
Yeah, for me, it was, being the youngest of the older three. Yeah, I always kind of looked up to them. I saw them. I saw that they're, you know, really involved with the youth group, that they were had a relationship with God. And I saw that, and I was inspired by it. But being the youngest, I didn't think it was maybe possible for me. And it was actually during Lent in early high school that things changed. So I'd gone to youth group. I had small encounters, but I hadn't made a decision for Christ. And it was the beginning of Lent. It was Ash Wednesday. And I remember Dad kind of, yeah, I think for me to sidetrack for a moment, is it was important for me to be able to do it, make the decision myself. As a teenager and a young adult, it can be difficult kind of being coached by your parents. You know, you kind of want that distance. You want to do it on your own. It feels difficult to have kind of deeper conversations with your parents. And I needed that. And mom and dad weren't very, you know, hard on us. Like, you know, let's sit down and pray right now that you have a conversion. It was giving soft invitations. And I remember, so it was Ash Wednesday, and we were driving to Ash Wednesday Mass. And dad kind of explained how it's important to not just give up stuff during Lent, not just give up the sweets, but to do something, to pray daily, to make decisions for your relationship with God. And I remember listening to him just being like, oh, sure, you know, he's talking to Joe and Milan. And so I didn't internalize it. I thought it was for them, because I kind of felt like I was the youngest, kind of more immature. I didn't feel like I was capable of making that kind of decision. But I remember it was sinking in. It was ruminating over that evening and through the next day. And I remember the next day I was taking my bus home from school, and I got off the bus and I'd just been thinking about it. And I remember as I was walking from the bus stop to the house, I remember realizing that it was kind of revealed to me. And I feel like the Lord was kind of speaking this to me, is that I could choose this. That it didn't matter that I was the youngest, maybe that I wasn't the most mature yet, or that I wasn't whatever, that I could choose it. And I remember as I was walking home, I was like, I'm going to pray every single day this Lent. And I was so excited. I was so excited. I was filled with like this joy that I could, for me, it wasn't just a decision to pray daily, but it was a decision to put Jesus, bring him into my life, to invite him in. And I remember kind of like running into the house and excited to pray that I chose a relationship with God that day. And that was the turning point. There's maturation and growth in that. And it wasn't the best Lent. I didn't pray every single day, but it was the first time that I made a decision to invite God into my life. So it is kind of cool. It does have a lot to do with mom and dad. And it was through their encouragement that I was able to make that decision. So that's my story.
Yeah. And it was their encouragement, but at the same time, they gave you the full freedom mm-hmm. to just like, you know, you have to be the one to choose. We can't choose for you, and we can't force you to choose.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Now, one question for all of you, and since your dad is here, we can put him on the spot a little bit. Your family has a really unique family culture, and that, like, within CCO, we have the core value of holy goofiness, and your family really embodies that.
On steroids.
maybe going a little bit further into buffoonery, but
definitely.
You guys really live that. What's one memory growing up of something you did as a family or your dad led you into, like, for that really stands out to you? Is like, that was just crazy. Like that was hilarious. Like a real moment of like, that was insane.
maybe I'll kind of speak of kind of the culture Angers and I just naturally, you know, allowed to fall into place. One is that we wanted the house, the home, to be a place where you can be who you really are. And it's not a formal place, meaning the living room is to be lived in, not, you know, be careful of, you know, everything around it. We don't want to break, you know, all the lamps or, you know, or dirty the rug or, you know, so, you know, we didn't want to have that kind of environment. The house was a place to play. And so we want them to enjoy that. So we there was, you know, if there is a place where you could be rebellious or break some rules, it's in the home, not outside of the home. Yeah. That's when you have to respect people and you know, you want, no, I don't want them rebelling out there with drugs or alcohol or promiscuity, you know, whatever it is. Didn't say the word properly, but I wanted them to rebel within the home, meaning break some rules.
Have some fun.
Yeah. And so sometimes it did, you know, cross some lines, but I'd rather them cross the lines in the home because mm-hmm. those lines aren't too severe, you know. Anyway, so there are some stories of those lines that were crossed.
One story is, so obviously like with CCO, mom and dad travel quite a bit. And so often when mom and dad were out of the house, then it was like we were older, but like we kind of had free reign of the house. And so we just like goof off. So I remember this one time me and Caleb like got a bouncy ball. We're in university at this time. Like we're not like six, like, but we got a bouncy ball and we're like, this is sick. So we're like bouncing it around off the walls. And I remember Milen was running up the stairs and it's a big kind of tall open staircase. And so I wanted to scare her as she was going up the stairs. So I whipped it at the wall and just went like boom, 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 like all the way up kind of to the roof. I thought it was really funny, but I forgot there was a chandelier. And so I shattered one of the like light fixtures. And then we're like, oh, shoot. Now what do we do? So then me and Caleb like took it down and it was like, luckily it broke into big pieces. And so we were like, hey, we need to fix this before mom and dad get back. And so we just took some clear hockey tape and we like started trying to like tape it back together. But we're like, this is too good to keep to ourselves. So we decided we're going to post on social media, which wasn't smart because mom and dad are also on Facebook. So they also saw our posts. But so we were kind of posting a step-by-step tutorial on when you break a chandelier with a bouncy ball, how to put it back together.
And that's thus ended your life of crime ahead of time.
Yeah. And it's actually still up there to this day. And you wouldn't even know that cool. It's literally fixed with hockey tape.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
I guess I wasn't on Facebook that day. We need to talk.
Yeah, mom never gets mad. Like, when, well, that's an exaggeration. But when things break, she's usually quick to laugh it off or, yeah, within reason, of course. But if I were to describe our humor, it would be pretty slapstick. Like that would probably be our style for the most part. I remember it was a birthday and a lot of it happens at the dinner table. Like that's where most of the laughs happen. That's where, you know, we're just getting crazy. And I remember one birthday, I think it was my birthday. Mom made a cake and we sang happy birthday and it was really fun. And a classic dad move is as you're blowing out the candles is to like push your face into the cake. So it was my birthday, you know, blew the candles and he pushed my face in the cake and he got a lot of laughs and I was going kind of crazy. And then kind of took a little bit further. I think he picked up a piece of cake and threw it at Milan and everyone's laughing. We're all kind of throwing cake. And then dad's like, I'm taking this a bit further. So he grabs another piece of cake and he slaps it in mom's face. And then it stops. Mom did not like that at all. She stood up at the table and said, no, too far. She went upstairs. And the laughing, the fun was over. We all just sat down and we're like, okay. But we laugh about it very often that's too far. You never hit mom.
But again, yes, I went too far. A classic dad thing. By the way, you guys will be dads someday and that you'll be classic dads. So you're laughing at me. Your kids are going to laugh at you. But I think what makes it lighthearted is that event, that experience, is something that we talk about a lot. And Angèle doesn't take offense to it. It actually is endearing. Like her response is endearing. It was, mom did the appropriate thing. Okay, we went too far. and walk out. But we laugh about it all the time now. We bring those up not as something that broke the family apart, but actually, you know, it just, oh, shoot, Dad went too far.
Well, and it really builds that family culture.
Funny thing about that story, like, that should be a normal story. But the funny thing is that was one of the only times in our that I can remember that someone actually said this went too far. Because usually we just, like, things happen and just, like, ridiculous things and no one gets upset. So that was, we find that so funny because someone actually reacted. Yeah, I think, like, I can't think of, like, a really good story, but I think a thing that happens consistently over time is we often have, and one interesting thing is we have often people coming over, and people always, when they come, like, it's this crazy thing, like, going to the Reniers, because things happen they've never done before. Like, you know, we'll be sitting around the living room, and Joe and Caleb will start doing an ape act. Or, like, they'll start acting like apes and climb on top of each other. And, like, it looks ridiculous. We'll do, like, pyramids. That's a classic Renier and CCO thing. And it's a CCO thing because the Reniers do it. Like, we do all these, like, crazy things in the living room. Like, using furniture and people to do crazy things. And, yeah, using our living room basically as a circus ring. And yeah, it's very, and it always, like, it's always something different and something crazy. Someone gets injured, like, but it's always,
some people would say that they were inappropriate things, meaning, you know, Joe one time, he decided they have this one little routine they do that kind of comments on the arts, you know? And so Joe at one bit of time gets on the couch and he was going to jump in the air. And as he jumped off the couch, we heard a crack, okay? Now, that could have been, okay, everyone stop doing what we're doing. We're having fun right now, but that was bad, you know? By the way, we're not telling people to do this. This is the way we run things in our home. It was like we all were, like, we stopped in our tracks, and we all heard the crack, and, you know, we laughed about it, and then we moved on. Because you know what? A couch can be repaired. But a family that is broken is a lot hard to repair. And so that was a family moment. That wasn't an opportunity to kind of, you know, create division in a family because somebody did something, you know, that they shouldn't have, like, put chocolate cake in their wife's face in front of their children. You know, like, those things could break families up. But for us, it actually pulls us together.
Mm-hmm. A recent story that we've all been really loving is so our carpet, like, mom and dad have, like, obviously a carpeted living room, so it can be a gymnasium where you can do flips and wrestling and stuff like that. So it's like a well used carpet. Like, if you've been to our house, you know, it's like it's been through the ringer.
Yeah.
And but it was just like 2 weeks ago, and dad was like renting a shampooer to, like, clean the carpet before Easter. And so he knew tomorrow I'm going to be shampooing the carpet. And we're just sitting there. It's like after meal, we're like drinking coffee. And then out of nowhere, he goes, "Boys, never do this." And then he pours his whole cup of coffee onto the white carpet. And it was just like so out of the blue. And Elizabeth, who's like very like likes things clean and ordered, was like mortified. She's like, clean it up. And she's like running around trying to like find stuff. But we were killing ourselves laughing. And then dad's like, "Oh, like, we're going to shampoo." And we're like, "Okay, like, no worries. That was like a good joke." What he didn't realize is the coffee stain's not coming out. So all Easter, it's been like the saga of, you know, does baking soda and vinegar get rid of a huge coffee stain? And now the coffee stain kind of looks like, it looks like the earth. It looks like a map of the earth. And so it's getting better, but it's been like a running joke. Will this stain ever leave? In fact, like, Alana actually decorated her Easter egg this year. Says, like, "I make all things new." And it's an overview of, like, a bird's eye view of the living room with stains. And then the other side, there's no stain. It's like, you know, Jesus can make all things new. So we're just spiritual like that.
Yeah.
We're so deep.
I think that the point, like, you know, us having crazy fun, like, everybody has a different sense of humor. And we know that our humor is very unique.
It's the best.
We think it's the best, but I know
every family is the best.
But your family probably has the best sense of humor in your mind, which is true in your mind.
in your anyways, little mind.
In your little feeble. No. But I think like the key is like we like growing up, we actually had the most fun in our home. So oftentimes you see teenagers getting out of the home to go with their friends and have lots of fun. And obviously we had lots of fun with our friends outside of the home as well. But we always had a lot of fun at home. And actually, I remember my friends growing up, they always wanted to come to my house because there was always fun things going on. So I think that was one cool thing is that we found our family life brought life to us and we weren't searching for joy and happiness and life outside of the home, you know, in things that could have been destructive. So, yeah, our home life was fun. It was life-giving and it was a place that we actually felt like, oh, we don't need to go searching, like, stuff is happening here, you know? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
We are running down on time. So one last question for all of you. Each one of you, you're either entering into having a family, you have a family, or you're just about to have your first child,
yeah,
Joe.
4 weeks.
Of all the things you talk about in the book, what's one thing that you really want to take away and either are applying to your family or really want to apply to your own family to help it so that your family is an awesome missionary disciple family?
I'll start. So I'm getting married this summer. One of the first chapters of the book is called Takes a Village, and it's really about surrounding yourself with a community, with people for your kids, yeah, to help them grow up in the faith. And that's one thing that I think I'm going to really try to have in my family for the future when we do have kids. And really now we're actually moving to Calgary. We're going to be working at Mount Royal University there to really surround ourselves, to look for a community of, yeah, CCO alumni and all that, to be able to surround ourselves with them, both for ourselves and for our future children. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I see. Yeah, and I'm really excited for you guys to read the book because all the things we've been talking about, this included, we're really thinking about what are principles, not prescriptions, that you need to do this exact thing, but what are principles that you guys can take and use. And so that's one principle that really came to mind for me. Yeah, that's mine.
Well, for me, there's obviously lots of stuff in the book that I think is valuable. I think every chapter is valuable. But for me, what I've actually been practically being like, okay, I have to look back to see what it says here to use it, is stuff on discipline and learning respect for, like, in my case, toddlers, because that's my world right now. And so there's a lot of, like, practical lists of, like, ways that my parents instilled discipline in us and respect and, like, teaching us to make good decisions, like, because we want to. So that's something that I find in the book has been valuable to even me. I go back and be like, okay, how do I handle these situations that I'm dealing with my kids? And I find it has been actually helpful for me, in raising them to be people who are wanting to do good because it's good.
Milena's actually has two children, Max, who's 5, and Audrey, or 4, and Audrey is 2. I can see in Max already has a vision for his future because he looks at his uncles and his aunties, and he absolutely loves them. And you know why he loves them? Because they absolutely love him. Like, it's family. And Max is being trained in humor by spending time with his uncles, and some of it needs to be sifted and you know, somehow dealt with, because
we're gonna teach him the coffee stain joke
in
a few years.
but I think, you know, you can see that happening. Like, your kids already see what their preferred future is, but Joe, you're about to be a father. You're entering daddy world.
Yeah, so we're gonna have our baby pretty quick. I think for me, one of the biggest things about our family, and I think one of the big principles from the book, is I want, like, our family life to be a thing of freedom. That I want home and family and faith to be something that's, like, that they experience as, like, as life-giving, as joyful, that they feel it's not mom and dad's house and I'm just living here, that it's our house, you know? So, like, they can run around, they can, like, have fun. It's, you don't have to be afraid that like the priceless china is going to get broken because like we don't have that out on display because we know the kids are running around, you know? And along with Caleb, the importance of having community and making sure that like our kids have CCO students, youth group, like net missionaries, people in the parish that they can be around as to show them like a preferred future that like we're seeing with Max kind of experience of the family. And obviously like our family will also be a big part of that experience for our children.
Yeah, bring your children home. I want my grandchildren to be close to me.
Thanks for joining us today for our conversation on Brick by Brick, How to Raise a Missionary Disciple Family by the Reniers. This is our second of our two-part series, and I will be sitting down with some more of the Renier family next week to continue our conversation. If you have any questions, comments, queries, quandaries, conundrums, or otherwise, please email us at podcast@cco.ca. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating and review on iTunes, as this will help us to reach new audiences. Once again, I'm your host, Gerhard, and you're listening to the Missionary Disciple Podcast by Catholic Christian Air Reach. Until next time, God bless.